Family, I am the Communications Director of the Internet Caucus Advisory Committee. I want to welcome you all today to Tracking Wireless Location Privacy Commitments by Law, hosted by the Advisory Committee in conjunction with the Internet Caucus and its co-chair. This time, I'd like to introduce John Morris, who will be our moderator for the day, and he's from the Center for the Knowledge of Technology.
Thanks very much, Danielle, and thanks everyone for coming. The title is Tracking Wireless Location Privacy, and the tracking part is really to remind us that 5 years ago, in 2001, the Internet Caucus Advisory Committee had hosted a program back in 2001 on location privacy, and we learned a great deal then, although I'm not sure if many of you were there. But a lot has happened since 2001, and it's really become, in 2001, I think the panel was really predicting that location services and location privacy issues were really going to be at the forefront of technology development, and I think we've seen that to be the case, and I think there's still going to be even bigger issues over the next 5 years. So, and since 2001, CTIA, the Cellular Telecommunications Internet Association, has implemented, released, and implemented its best practices. CTIA also asked the FCC to initiate a rulemaking about location wireless privacy, location privacy. But the FCC issued certain rules on CPNI, customer proprietary network information. But the FCC decided that they did not take the CTIA's invitation to issue special rules focused on location privacy. There's also been a great deal of activity in the E911 space. That's what really sparked the action even 5 years ago, was focused on E911 issues. And the FCC has been very active in the last 5 years on E911. Going so far as even to propose last year in a notice of proposed rulemaking the possibility of even requiring devices to be able to be location aware, which would be kind of the most proactive regulation on location issues. The FCC has not done that yet, but at least the proposal is out there. Let me take a moment and just give a plug for another Internet Caucus Advisory Committee event on July 13th here in Rayburn, which will be showcasing, it's the summer technology fair that the Internet Caucus puts on, and it will be showcasing emergency communications technology. And then most recently, there's been a lot of discussion over the past week about CPNI, customer proprietary network information, which does include location information, because it's CPNI that the phone companies like AT&T and Verizon have been alleged to have turned over to the National Security Agency. And we don't really know whether that includes location information, although it probably does for the wireless companies. We're not going to be talking today about the national security side of this whole issue. It's really going to be more focused on companies and consumer-oriented privacy, but certainly location privacy is a very important set of issues. And also since 2001, we've seen just an explosion of new and maturing wireless technologies. Wi-Fi networks were, they existed in 2001, but now they're on almost every street corner and in a growing number of city parks and entire cities, and in some cases are proposing to create wireless networks. Apparently, the state of Rhode Island is trying to create a statewide wireless network. So, we've seen just an enormous explosion of wireless technologies. We also have other technologies other than the straight narrow Wi-Fi. We have the Verizon's EDVO product. I suspect that 80% of you have BlackBerries on your belts right now. And there are new technologies like WiMAX, which may be getting deployed over the next year. So we've certainly seen lots of new wireless technologies. And it's a little bit privacy rules apply to the wireless technologies, if any, and in particular, what rules apply to location. You know, over since 2001, we've seen a significant expansion of technologies that can be used to determine location. And so in the old days, say 5 or 10 years ago, a cell phone company could determine where you are, where a cellular user is, by saying, okay, his signal, my signal is coming into a certain tower, and so the person must be fairly near the tower. And that evolved into the ability to triangulate where someone is based on the cell signal received by two or three towers. And one can figure out mathematically, okay, if you know tower one is receiving a signal here and tower two receiving a signal here, then the person is probably at the intersection of those two lines. And we now also have seen an explosion of GPS, global positioning satellite systems, where a device itself can look at the signals from two or three different satellites overhead and figure out where it is with a very high level of precision. We've seen a lot of new technologies for determining location. And we're going to hear about today at least one or two even newer and more innovative technologies, to determine location based on Wi-Fi signals, not the Wi-Fi signals that you might be attached to, but just Wi-Fi signals that are in the community. We're going to hear about some of that technology today. And there are also technologies where the tracking of cell phone signals is not being limited to the cell phone companies. There are other companies that are beginning to start tracking cell phone signals and perhaps selling traffic management information based on cell phone signals. There are new proposed technologies that that might allow a Wi-Fi network to tell a laptop that has come into the network, you're located at 16th and K Street. So if the laptop needs to place an emergency call, it knows where it is, so it could then place that call. And we've also seen a diversity of business models and strategies emerging, from advertising supportive services with location-based advertising. Social networking, we'll hear about some social network products, and Wi-Fi-based ads that are kind of targeting your web interactions, but with location-specific services, traffic management, and even back right around the exact time that we have the 2001 location panel, we heard an instance where a rental car company imposed a fine on a renter because their GPS tracking technology showed that the renter had been speeding in violation of the contract agreement. So that's just a very quick overview of kind of the rapid technology changes we've seen over the last 5 years. I'm going to introduce our panel and ask each of them to give a very quick overview and a kind of quick intro, but then we're going to get into, I hope it will be an interesting and very good exchange and dialogue with questions, and then a little bit later, we will end up opening the floor to questions from you and have even more questions. So let me just introduce our three panelists first. Just going down the line, we have Jed Rice of Skyhook Wireless, which also offers the low-key product that I'm sure we'll be discussing today. Jed is the Vice President for Market Development at Skyhook and was responsible, as I understand it, or very involved in the launch of the consumer-oriented Loki web-based product, which is a location-aware web service. And prior to joining Skyhook, Jed was with Cygol Systems and with EDOX, where he developed a broad range of innovative different products. And before that, if I'm correct, he was a corporate lawyer, right?
Reformed.
But he reformed. He's moved on to a better place. A number of other folks here, including me, have not yet moved on from being lawyers. We'll hear from Jed on Wi-Fi technology. Technology, located on Place Technology. Next, we have Jim Smolin of Wave Market, which is a company that has a broad range of location-based services, including the Sleepyhive product, which I'm sure we'll hear more about, which offers the, kind of, the ability to have social networking with location-aware social networking. So your BlackBerry would tell you that, hey, a friend of yours is on the other side of the room that you hadn't noticed, or just down the hall. But Jim is Vice President for Strategic Alliances with Wave Market, and before joining Wave Market, Jim had worked at Vodafone for a good number of years, one of the leading cellular technology companies, and then when he was with AirTouch Communications, which now is Verizon, so he has a long history in the area of wireless technology. And then finally, at the end is Mike Altschul of the of CTIA, which I suppose technically the name has changed. Now it's technically the CTIA, the Wireless Association.
Right, we're just using initials.
Okay, so CTIA stands for nothing.
It used to stand for something.
It used to stand for Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association. Mike is Senior Vice President and General Counsel of CTIA, which is the leading trade association for the wireless industry. And really under Mike's direction, as we'll talk about today, CTIA has been a very strong force speaking up for privacy protection within the wireless industry. And before joining CTIA, Mike spent 10 years with the DOJ's Antitrust Division focused on communication business. So that's a great panel. I'm going to somewhat play a double advocate role as a privacy advocate. My organization, the Center for Democracy and Technology, has been very active on advocating privacy issues in this space. And so I'll ask a few pointed questions. But let me go down the line and ask Jed to start with giving us a quick overview of what he's working on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here, especially in this weather, because coming from Boston, flying out this morning, I'm sure you heard about the rain. I could swear FEMA was lining up animals two by two on the runway. So the whole issue around privacy and location is actually very relevant to our business on almost a daily basis. If I were to ask you to raise your hands, most of you would say over the course of last week, you've used a lot of this location-sensitive content that's out there. You've used Google Maps, you've used MapQuest, you've looked for directions, you've tried to find something, or you've looked for locally relevant content, meaning you've looked for the pizza shop next door, or tried to find something that's near you. And all that content that's widely available to consumers nowadays has got a very, very heavy location context to it. What's really unique now in terms of what the technology is doing is now that you move past the Googles and the Yahoos and the Zagats and the Zandangos and the Yahoo movies, is the ability now to automatically identify somebody's location and put those two things together. And if I were to ask you to raise your hands again, probably very few of you have a GPS device, probably, and probably not even a GPS-enabled phone. But probably a very large percentage of you have Wi-Fi enabled laptops or desktops. And that's what SkyUp's kind of unique capability is, and where things really get interesting for us on the privacy side, because our technology allows you to take any Wi-Fi enabled or wireless enabled device like a laptop and turn it into a virtual GPS, meaning that the device that you use every single day running our software can actually pinpoint your location to within about 20 meters. That's including sitting at your desk or sitting at home. And the reason we do those things is because there is a driving consumer demand for that location content I talked about and for better access to that content. And we've married those two together at Skyhook in a number of different ways, doing things like E911 for voice over IP, things like Vonage, things like fleet and asset tracking. But the unique thing we've really done is taken the whole Google search concept and marry that with our location technology for this product that John mentioned called Loki, L-O-K-I. And now what you can do is you can actually type in a simple search query, and with our software, it's going to automatically identify your location within that 20 to 50 meters and give you back very, very specific content based on your very specific location. Now, that obviously raises privacy issues. We have very detailed privacy statements, policies, and procedures at our company. We follow those to the strictest standards. But we also are bringing in other people, outsiders, folks like Mike Liebel for the Institute for the Future, who's actually coming on as advisory for us to help us think about how we make location even stronger in terms of the privacy model. Things like quarantining location, allowing us to use it as a technology but not to have access to it. So I think in the future, as the technology like ours becomes more prevalent and becomes more accessible to the average consumer, and the privacy issue is going to become even more important, and I think forums like this are going to be very relevant for discussions that we have.
Great. Thanks very much. I'm Jim. I'm going to turn to you.
As John mentioned, my name is Jim Smolin. I'm the Vice President of Strategic Alliances for Wave Market out of the Silicon Valley in California. Wave Market is notably the industry leader in providing location-based services and applications for the wireless marketplace. Since 2000, we have deployed all of our services and applications to the world's leading wireless operators. In the United States, that includes Sprint PCS, Verizon Wireless, Singular, and T-Mobile, who are all either currently deploying, have deployed, or are in active trial with one or more of our applications and services. Out of Canada, with Bell Mobility, who is the largest wireless operator, and TELUS, the second largest. Vivo, the largest wireless operator out of Brazil. And SK Telecom, the largest wireless operator out of South Korea. Our applications give you the ability to locate your family members, track your business assets and manage them remotely, find and match you up with your perfect date, and give you directions and locations of nearest restaurants, gas stations, and turn-by-turn directions on how to get there. Most recently, we launched a service with Sprint Nextel, which is called Family Locator, which allows parents to locate their children's phones wherever they happen to be, as long as the phones are on the Sprint network and are powered on. We think that through the next few years, location-based services are just going to blossom, both for the consumer and for the business users. These services and the privacy constraints that are placed upon us as a developer mostly come from our interaction both with our wireless carrier partners and through the industry consortium of CTIA. We either follow or exceed the We either follow or exceed the mandates that are placed upon us, and we feel that the industry and the way that they're managing it is leading us to an area where we'll have better applications in the future. And in terms of privacy and security, we believe that things are handled appropriately through the current industry symposiums. Excuse me. Yes, sir.
Great. Thanks. Mike?
Well, thank you, John, and I want to thank the Internet Caucus for inviting all of us and having this program today. I've been asked to provide a little background as to what CTIA is, the Trade Association for the Wireless Industry, had proposed going back to November 2000, because the wireless carriers are regulated by the FCC, and Congress has made the FCC responsible for the rules that apply to wireless carriers. We petitioned the Federal Communications Commission for some more specific rules that would apply to location privacy. It's a bit of history. In 1999, Congress passed the 911 Act that accomplished a few things. One, it made 911 the sole, only, exclusive emergency number for calling PSAPs. Up till then, there had been a patchwork quilt of different numbers around the country. It also, at Congressman Markey's insistence, amended the Communications Act and added location information, location privacy, as a specific enumerated element in the area of what we call CPNI, Customer Proprietary Network Information. but all carriers, and this was specific to wireless carriers, have an obligation under Section 222 of the Communications Act to secure this proprietary customer network information, which prior to that amendment had been call records, so kind of call detail information on your phone bill and in the news right now this week. The 911 Act added location information for wireless customers. So within a year of that amendment, the association petitioned the FCC to adopt some rules based on existing Federal Trade Commission best practices for privacy information. Be very candid about this, in order to provide wireless customers with a uniform set of expectations as to how their privacy rights would be protected, and therefore encourage the rapid development and uptake of location-based services. One of the other things that was going on at the same time is that the FCC, in a parallel rulemaking, had imposed a mandate on wireless carriers to deploy location-based 911 service to all customers across America, so that in the event a wireless customer called 911, the local dispatch center would be able to know the location the call was coming from. While no technology was mandated by the FCC, the wireless industry, half of the carriers chose the triangulation system that John mentioned. The other half included a GPS processor in the handset as a way of locating consumers. And it was obvious that commercial location-based services would take advantage of these technologies. What was not included in the amendment to the Communications Act and was not included in the association's petition to the FCC is the kind of location tracking information that carriers' networks have always maintained to locate and complete calls. Just by coincidence, although I live and work in Washington, after this lunch I'm going to be flying to Atlanta. As soon as I land in Atlanta at the airport, turn on my phone is going to register with a wireless system in the city of Atlanta. That network is going to send a signal to my home switch here in Washington, and a little notation is going to be made at my home switch that I happen to be in Atlanta. And as I move from Atlanta to a suburb, my location will be used in the network. So if somebody wants to call me, the call will find me. They won't be looking for me here on the Hill or DuPont Circle or in Arlington where I live. From the very first cellular call in Soldier's Field in 1983, wireless networks have kept track of where customers are within a fairly constrained but not a precise geographic location to be able to complete calls. That information has never really been maintained. It's done in a write, overwrite, read, overwrite kind of format. There was no need to archive it, and in 1983, memory was very expensive. So the way the systems were created from the beginning is a notation is made, and as soon as the location is updated, the earlier location is overwritten and the current location is there. Anticipating perhaps a question later, oftentimes when call bills are recorded for billing information, the originating cell site is recorded as part of the billing record, but it's not maintained by the carrier's network. And it's done for sales tax purposes and geographic separations that are important in determining whether some calls are local or long distance. But we did not include that this kind of network-based location tracking be part of our petition, only the kind of commercial services that we heard the other panelists talk about. The other kind of location information that was not included in CTI's petition was aggregate information, information that does not identify any individual user. There have been some proposals to use cell phone and other wireless phone calls. It sounds like a disease, but as vectors on highways, so that instead of tracking an individual car, you could actually see how quickly phones were traveling down the Interstate 95 corridor, or not traveling if they were stuck in traffic, and looking at each of the transmissions as a point, and measuring how fast or slow that particular beam was moving, you could get traffic information that would be more reliable than other kinds of reporting systems. But again, the information would not identify any unique user. It just would be individual data points that could be used. So with those two exceptions, CTI asked the FCC to come up with a set of rules, as I mentioned, based on well-established Federal Trade Commission principles for privacy. Really, user consent is the key. If a user consents to make his or her location available to a commercial application, that should be the touchstone for policymakers. Consent requires meaningful notice. So we start with an obligation to provide a user with notice as to how a location would be used in order to provide the user with an opportunity to give consent. An additional part of the Federal Trade Commission policy for fair information practices is security and integrity. Congress has had hearings in the last few months about the security of customer records. We're all aware that there have been data brokers primarily using identity theft who, through pretexting, get call records from carriers. Well, the security of this kind of call detail information, customers' call records, is part of the expectation the carriers would be held to keep that information secure and maintain systems with integrity, and also to allow customers to monitor the use and maintenance of the system. And finally, and most importantly, I think, for today's discussion, was the principle of technical or technology neutrality. The interesting thing as an unlapsed telecommunications lawyer is that the Communications Act, and in particular Section 222, applies to carriers. Carriers are a defined term, and it's the companies that you all think of as wireless carriers, such as Singular, Verizon Wireless, T-Mobile, Sprint, Nextel, and the like. But they're not the only ones who are able to provide location information. Many, if not most, cars now come with navigation systems, and many come with communication systems, such as OnStar. And those systems, when they're just using a wireless network as a customer, probably not carriers. We're going to see in the next year pretty much all of the national wireless carriers deploying handsets that will both work on their licensed commercial wireless spectrum and also work off of Wi-Fi hotspots. We don't want a customer who starts a call, say in a Starbucks, using a Wi-Fi hotspot, and then steps outside and the call is handed off to a commercial mobile radio service to have different privacy expectations. Again, we were concerned at the very beginning that customers have a uniform set of privacy expectations that would really facilitate the success and customers embracing these services, because we understood that if customers were afraid that their location information would be misused, they would not sign up, they wouldn't subscribe for these innovative services. So we wanted a uniform, technology-neutral set of rules that will apply to all location-based services. I think that's really all I want to say by way of background. The final piece of the puzzle, which I think brings us to today, is after obtaining comments from industry, privacy groups, citizens, and the like, the FCC in July of 2002 declined to grant our petition, thought that the existing statute was clear enough and that they didn't want preemptively before services evolved and problems appeared, to anticipate problems and have rules that may or may not have been appropriate for it. So we currently have the 1999 amendment that includes location privacy in the Communications Act that applies to carriers, but none of the other principles that we had asked the FCC to adopt. However, as the panelists did mention, the wireless industry through CTI has voluntarily and unanimously adopted these principles as voluntary best practices, and all of the carriers and our members have adopted and are following them, even in the absence of rules.
Great. Thanks very much, Mike. But before getting into kind of the real debate about privacy, let me just ask a couple of follow-up questions to Jed and Jim about the products they offer. Jed, I think probably folks have an understanding of GPS, basically, and an understanding of cell tower triangulation. But can you just take a minute and explain the Wi-Fi tracking? Is that really kind of triangulation on Wi-Fi signals, or how? Very quickly, how does that work?
Same exact principle. So GPS works on the idea, and so does cell tower triangulation, that you have fixed known points, that being satellites or cell towers. You introduce an unknown device into those that mixed mode, and it does reverse triangulation to pinpoint it. We do the same exact thing, except we use the Wi-Fi access points. And there are 40 million of them in the U.S. There are 500,000 of them in downtown Chicago alone. We know where they are. We know where the fixed location of those Wi-Fi access points are. So by introducing a Wi-Fi-enabled laptop, PDA, dual-mode phone, any of those things into that environment, you do the same reverse triangulation to get accurate location on top of it.
Okay, so just to be clear, I mean, you don't have contracts or agreements with those Wi-Fi bases. You've sent a car down through the streets and figured out, okay, the Wi-Fi network name. No.
Right. So we currently have 200 people driving around the United States, every single street, alley, and block within a coverage area that by the end of this summer will map to 75% of the U.S. population.
Okay.
So there's a 3 in 4 chance that we'll be able to find your location if you're running our software on that Wi-Fi-enabled device.
Okay, great. And then just very briefly, and the StreetHive product, which is your social networking product, I mean, am I correct in understanding that kind of allows you to look at your PDA and see which of your friends are nearby? Is that? I'm sorry, I switched. Hold on a second. Let me hold on a second. Loki is your web-based location.
Right, so that's available. That's something we're doing in terms of introducing location-based services to the market. You can actually download it for free, and we have a lot of people who are using it already. I mean, you know, very healthy six figures. And basically what it does, it takes your Google search bar and it marries it with your automatic location so that when you search for anything, it automatically matches the two of those together. It has a lot of other things in it together as well in terms of like pages or favorites or bookmarks that are already built into it. You can email your location to people. There's a lot of functionality in that, but it combines the two, internet content plus the location.
Okay, let me turn to Jim and ask him about the StreetHive product. Sorry to confused, get you flipped. Just a little bit more just to kind of explain to the audience how it works.
Okay, regarding StreetHive, what we noticed during a number of different focus groups, both across a wide variety of sexes, age, you know, where they were born and raised, whether they were technically savvy or not, we noticed two main things. People who are in their mid-40s, like myself, generally don't want others to know where they're at. However, 14-year-olds to 25-year-olds want everybody to know where they're at. They want to know their friends. They want their friends to know exactly what they're doing at all times of day. We've had people sending out hundreds of text messages during a 2.5-hour focus group. The phenomena of MySpace and the social networking on the web made it an obvious choice for us to also look at social networking on the mobile. People, you know, the majority of kids, at least out in the metropolitan areas, generally carry one of these around. I don't know how many of you have children out there. My daughter had one at the ripe age of 10. She's now 14. She's on her third cell phone. I have a 12-year-old son. He's got a cell phone. My 9-year-old is clamoring, and I'm holding him off. All right. At that age group, it's for socializing. The youth of today tend to do more instant messaging, either from a mobile phone or over a AOL IM or Yahoo or MSN, versus email. They want instantaneously to let people know what they're doing and how much fun they're having. What Street Hive does is it allows a user to download the Street Hive application onto their phone, and from that application either determine their location via assisted GPS, or they can triple tap in off of the keypad where their location is at. And from that point on, they can upload to a website everything that they're doing. They can take pictures with the phone. If they're in a nightclub, you know, take a picture of the latest and greatest band. They could notify their friends of where Wi-Fi hotspots happen to be. Anything that you want, any type of communication that you want with your friends, you can upload. The Street Hive website allows you to look at what has been publicly uploaded from individuals. If I, for instance, want to upload, you know, some, you know, the latest rock band that's playing at a club, but I only want my friends to know it, I can upload that and mark it private, and only my friends who are in either, if you will, an online address book that I set up have access to my postings.
Great. Thanks. Mike, let me ask you, back in 2001, one of the points that CTIA made was that without kind of a national set of clear privacy rules for location, there'd be a kind of a hindrance to the deployment of technology, location technology. And have you seen that, or how has that really played out in the market?
Well, I think the industry and rallying around the industry best practices has provided a uniform set of customer expectations. But we have seen in a handful of states, individual state legislative proposals that would impose a patchwork quilt and for a mobile service that would, confuse consumers as to what their rights or expectations were. None of them have been passed, happily. We've also seen, as often happens, that the first of these services were done in the commercial context. So, for example, fleet operators have for some time been able to monitor the location of their trucks so as to be able to dispatch the nearest vehicle to pick something up or make sure that someone's not off on a frolic and detour, hopefully all with the employees' consent that they're being monitored. And now we're seeing the first of the sort of widespread commercial applications that are being done outside of a commercial context. So for families, at our recent trade show, Disney announced, and so did Sprint, family-based location monitoring products that really will allow, in addition to the social networking, parents to be able to monitor location of their children.
John, if I can add in, as I mentioned earlier, WaveMarket has launched with Sprint the Family Locator application, which is commercially available today. The launch was approximately 3 weeks ago, and it allows parents utilizing their phone or via a website to go and keep location and locate their children. The privacy aspects of it that we've implemented, it might be a little bit different than what the industry might have been expecting. Rather than keeping everything closed, when a child is located, when the child's device is located, we're notifying everybody, open kimono. When the parent, let's say a two-parent household plus a nanny locates Junior, if the nanny's locating Junior, both parents get a text message that the nanny located Junior and where Junior was at. Plus, Junior gets a text message on his phone stating, "Nanny just located you." So everybody knows. Same thing, you know, regardless of what parent-nanny combinations, grandparent combinations you have, Whenever that child gets located, the child is notified of it, and the parents are notified of it. That way, the issue of, geez, is somebody locating me or is somebody not locating me, we try to just wipe the slate clean on that.
Let me ask both Chad and Jim. Both of you, in your opening remarks, you know, stated that you really believe, your companies believe in and follow strong privacy principles. But I was surprised that on your main websites, neither of the websites had even had a privacy policy. So let me ask you both. One, can you tell us a little bit more detail exactly, you know, what you promise to protect for your customers and how they find out about that, since it's not clearly on your website?
So if you, on our website, if you do go to the bottom, there is a link that says privacy statement. Right at the bottom of the website.
I don't think so. I was there last night, but okay.
Yeah, right at the bottom of it, there's a bunch of things.
Sorry.
The other thing is that when you do go to download it, the application, it clearly states that you're protected under the privacy statement with a link there, and there's a separate page as well. And the privacy statement, in the way that, in particular, the Loki application works is, it states very clearly that we do not track your location. We have no idea where you are. There's a very anonymous and private connection between you and your device and giving location. We do know that somebody somewhere out there has asked for location, but we have no idea who that person is. So all we do is generate a latitude and longitude. That's also quarantined so that we cannot go in and do aggregation or anything else to actually track users or do anything. So the privacy statement is there, and it's part of the download process. And we had actually vetted that through a couple of different organizations, some folks that work with EFF and some others, so that we want to be very clear that if people were opting in, and there's a very clear opt-in to use the technology, that we had a very stated policy behind that in terms of how we treat the technology.
Okay. How about
Our privacy statement is actually, we're an engine powering an application for the Sprint brand. So when the user goes to download the application and register on the Family Locator website, there is a policy statement. Also, in order for them to use the application, it's downloaded onto your phone. They first have to go and accept terms and conditions, which include the policy statement, prior to ever getting activated on the account. So they have to clearly acknowledge that, you know, this is utilizing location-based data, and here's what location-based data means.
Okay. Is Street Hive, is that a product you sell directly to consumers?
Street Hive, we always partner through carriers.
Okay.
So Street Hive right now, anyone can go to streethive.com and register on the web and utilize it. If you wish to go and utilize the location piece, which is downloadable through the phone, you then have to go through one of our carrier partners and download the application.
Okay. Well, let me ask the whole panel about something that I think probably concerns consumers a great deal, and that's kind of unsolicited advertisements being kind of pushed down to your phone. So, and Mike, let me start with you and just ask, you know, CTIA's privacy principles. Would that permit unsolicited ads, or how would that be addressed by your principles?
Well, the principles don't address it other than allowing a lot of flexibility. So much like in the broadcast world, we all have a choice of seeing so-called free broadcast TV that's advertiser sponsored. And then there are cable offerings where we subscribe and may not be advertiser-sponsored. We have not foreclosed either model for wireless, but we would expect that customers understand what kind of service they're going to be getting.
Jim?
Well, when it comes to advertising on the mobile, it's actually a very dynamic space right now. I read recently about a new wireless company, a new startup, who's potentially going to provide free wireless service as long as you agree to go and read advertisements on your phone. Is that a bad thing? I don't think so. We'll see if the market would accept it. But advertisements out there everywhere in front of all of us. We all either have a logo on our shirt or when we do a Google search, we're being advertised to. I think it's, the question is whether or not you allow advertising to a mobile consumer versus spamming to a mobile consumer. And that's the differentiation that we need to keep in place. If I'm providing, let's say, a local point of interest for free, and I have a paid advertiser within my local point of interest, and since he's paying, I show his icon. I show, let's say, the logo of his company. Technically, that's advertising. Is that intrusive to the end user? Probably not. But it helps drive more business to that one particular merchant. Just as in a web search, you've got paid ads on the side. If somebody is sending me a text message that I did not want, saying come eat at Joe's for free beer or 99-cent hoagie sandwiches, and I don't want that text message, then I'm upset. So I think it really depends on the context of what's coming in. Spam versus something which is really more helpful to the consumer and less intrusive.
Okay.
Sure. And I agree with the last part of it. I mean, it has to do with two things. It has to do with really at least an implicit opt-in, meaning that you are using a technology that has a component to it which may deliver advertising, like a Google search does. And it has to be relevant. Google has built a very successful business because they do provide advertising based on the relative context of somebody's search. So when you talk about adding location, then the idea then becomes as long as you're using a service, and we're actively exploring putting advertising into Loki that will be opt-in, if you're using a service that uses location and you're looking for relative context, then promoting the fact that there's a Starbucks closer to you than a Dunkin' Donuts, or because of your location, you fit a particular demographic profile that matches better to a type of Visa card versus a type of MasterCard, as long as it's unobtrusive, relevant, and presented in the correct way, there should be nothing wrong with that. We've all been watching television forever, and it's become something that if it's done relevant and in the context, it's okay.
Well, let me ask more specifically. I mean, would either of any of the products that you offer essentially, I would create a situation where my wireless device would ring just to tell me an advertisement. I mean, I can certainly understand if I'm saying, where is the closest Pizza Hut, I also might be told where the closest Starbucks is. I can understand that. But is someone going to kind of intrude on that?
Certainly not for us. One, it's just bad business. We don't want to be lumped in with the Nigerians in terms of the spam that people get pushed with. And the key thing is that you want to do things that are an acceptable relationship. So if someone is using a particular location product of ours, then that advertising has got to fit into that context. It would never be pushed out. Because that's just from a business perspective, it's there's so much negative connotation that you want to steer clear of it.
We partner behind the carrier brands. If we did anything like that, we'd be cut off at the knees quicker than you could ever imagine. I mean, nobody wants an upset customer. And, the wireless carriers spend a lot of time and money and energy to keep their customers happy and to attract new customers. And they're not going to let a company, a third party, go in and damage that relationship that they've got.
Okay. Let's turn to the topic of data retention, not so much the data retention that some folks in Congress are proposing to require carriers to retain data. But I think, Jed, am I correct in understanding that if I was a customer or if I used a Loki product, you wouldn't have any record of where I was? Is that true?
Yeah, so the first thing you have to understand is we have no record of who you are. So everything is completely anonymous. So just from a technical perspective, you download Loki and an anonymous key is generated at that point. And we collect no information on who you are. Now, we track calls that are made to the system for logging purposes and technical purposes, and we can look at that key for those types of things, but we don't retain those for any longer than about 14 days. So they do get read-write out as well. Because we can't identify any particular location or an individual on that, it has got somewhat irrelevant for us.
So at least theoretically, if law enforcement came to you and said, we're tracking a Loki customer, and we've determined by peeking at his laptop mm-hmm. that his key is this, then you theoretically at least could
provide some background. And there's a very interesting debate we were in this last week about that very topic. And then what we're finding is we fall very much into the same realm with the carriers, where if they first of all have to be able to identify with great specificity the user. They can't have sort of a general idea of somebody. The other thing is that they have to have what is basically a search warrant. They can't just subpoena us for the information. If they've got to tie it to an individual, they then have to come to us with a certain level of proof to be able to generate a search warrant to be able to track that.
Okay. Jim, does Wave Market retain data on where people have been?
Very similar to Jet's comment, we do hold on to data, which is called, in our line of work, we use it as breadcrumbing, which shows previous locations of where an individual happened to be. We hold on to that data for 7 days and then write over it and blow it out of the system. And that's in accordance with, again, our carrier partners and what they prescribe to us.
I think the key thing, with what Jim's coming to do is you are opting in to use that service. You are opting in to tell people where you are. And I think that does express some level of understanding of what your privacy are. We have to be very sensitive to the fact that we are not allowing people to opt in to track their location. That creates a higher standard for us.
Okay. Mike, do the CTIA guidelines address data retention, this kind of information?
Only to the level I mentioned earlier with respect to the security and integrity of any information that is retained would be retained and made available only to a customer who wanted it, not to be marketed to a third party.
Okay.
And if I could just interject here, on my statement of holding that data for 7 days, that is solely accessible by the end consumer through their own password-protected site access. So it's not something that we have access to look at. We don't know who that end consumer happens to be, where they live, anything like that. That's all kept separate from us. All that we have is the account name and that they have initiated when they first logged into the system.
Mike, let me go back and ask you. In 2001, you asked the FCC to promulgate some binding rules. Does CTIA still believe that some binding rules would be a healthy thing for the industry?
Whether we do or don't, we don't anticipate that the FCC would be any more open to the idea today than they were then. So nothing's planned.
Okay. Let me come back to Ted and Jim and ask. Neither of you probably are a carrier under the Communications Act. So am I correct in thinking that there aren't any national rules that restrict you from, that force you to protect privacy? Is that right?
From a Wave Market perspective, our rules come from our customers. Our number one customer happens to be the carriers, and they pass along to us what they have defined by either, you know, the FCC or what they've agreed to with the CTIA. So indirectly, we are governed by the same rules that the carriers govern themselves by.
We're just a bunch of really nice guys. I mean, and it almost is that way. I mean, we really, there are no rules for us. There's nothing that applies to us. We are outside the realm of regulation. The basic principle that is driving us now is capitalism, and the fact that I've got four kids, and the fact that we want to make a successful company, we have to be very, very responsive to the market and to the consumer. That doesn't mean that we're not proactively getting involved to try and look at, if not at least federal regulation, but at least what standards are set by watchdog groups, people who are very interested in issues about privacy. We're engaging them to start, you know, give us guidance and direction so that we meet at least their standards.
Great, thanks. In just a moment, I'm going to open it up to questions from the floor. But before I do, I'm actually going to ask the audience a question, but actually ask one specific person a question. Miriam Shapiro on Summit Strategies International is here, and she's been very active in working on internet policy issues in Europe, really across the globe. But I'd ask Miriam if she could just give us a minute overview of kind of how the location privacy issue is being played out in other parts of the world. Yeah, why don't you come on up?
Thanks, John. At one point, we talked about even having an international perspective on the panel, but we thought for this first panel on the subject, since it's been a while since the caucus and staff have been updated on it, we would focus just on more of a domestic perspective. But I promised John I would say a few words internationally. As you, some of you may know, Europe has been working very hard to develop a cohesive regulatory framework, both the Commission and the member states. And I consider them the real trendsetter in the area of data privacy in general, and specifically on this topic, because in 1995 they came out with what I sometimes call the mother of all directives. It was the European Data Protection Directive, which in 1995 was really quite groundbreaking in terms of governing the processing of personal data and the free movement across borders of such data. In 2002, the European Parliament and the Council updated this directive specifically with respect to electronic commerce when they came out with the directive on privacy and electronic communications. That was in 2002, and Article 9 is really quite specific on the issue that we've been talking about. I'm just going to cite a couple of provisions briefly because I think they would be of interest to you. Article 9, Section 1, talks about the requirement that location data, other than traffic data, may only be processed when done anonymously, or with the consent of the users or subscribers, and only to the extent necessary and for the duration necessary for the provision of any value-added service. The service provider has to inform the user or the subscriber prior to obtaining their consent, so it's truly informed consent, of the type of location data which would be processed, and the purposes and the duration of the processing, and whether that data would be sent to a third party. Users and subscribers can, at any time, they must have the possibility to withdraw their consent for the processing of this data. I think it would also be of interest to know that the second part of that article talks about when consent has been obtained, the user, subscriber will continue to have the possibility, using simple means and at no charge to them whatsoever, of temporarily refusing the processing of such data for each connection to the network. So it's really quite groundbreaking. That was done in 2002. It's really a very clear-cut provision, not at all open-ended, on what kind of information has to be provided and how the user and subscriber can tailor their consent. A little more recently, in 2006, earlier this year, the Commission also promulgated a directive on data retention. John referred to that subject a few minutes ago. And there are provisions in there on the location information that we've been talking about, on the mobile location data that carriers do have to retain for a limited amount of time, but there are also restrictions on that. I'll just say a few words about Japan, which has also been the forefront of countries trying to grapple with the issues we've described today. Japan has a constitutional history dating all the way back to 1946, which of course is a relatively new constitution that the United States government helped draft, but at the same time, nobody in that era could foresee the mobile and wireless communications issues that we've been grappling with today, so it obviously doesn't address it. But they have enacted legislation that deals with personal privacy. And then more specifically on this subject, they enacted in 1998 some guidelines on the protection of personal data that also require informed consent by the subscriber or the user. So there are different ways that government international bodies have tried to deal with this issue. Obviously, there's legislation, there's self-regulation, also education and awareness, which we're hoping to do today. And then there's also the possibility of international cooperation. And at least for the United States, the OECD and APEC, Asia-Pacific body, and OECD, most of European and U.S. countries, have really worked very hard on privacy issues. And I think they would probably be, you know, two of the bodies that would be starting to look at these kinds of issues in the weeks and months ahead.
Great, thanks very much. I'm going to ask one more question. It's kind of a wish list question before we open it up. And that's that I know that there are some technical standards bodies that have been designing capability to allow users to have really granular control over their location information so that, you know, I can set a rule that says, you know, my wife and my mother can find out where I am 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, but my boss can only find out where I am, you know, 5 days a week, and maybe on weekends my boss can find out what city I'm in. Do any of you guys see that kind of product really, you know, coming onto the marketplace and being available?
Well, the Disney service is very close to that already, what was just announced. And there are a couple of vendors that have recently announced handsets that actually would control that information based on the customer's own control. It wouldn't reside in the network. And that would be another way of addressing these concerns.
Yeah, actually, I believe that there are handsets already entering the market that have a small application running on them that allow that that type of scheduling, if you will.
Well, one of the main players in instant messaging, AOL, is going to add the idea of presence. So right now the idea of online and offline. Well, soon they're going to have the ability for online at work, Starbucks, friend's house, by location. And there's been a lot of thought going into what they're basically referring to as a radius control, so that people on my super buddy list can see exactly where I am, but on a semi-buddy list or a public list, they may see that I'm in Massachusetts or maybe in Boston. So at the user level, they're very concerned about the idea of it's great if the technology can pinpoint your location. How you choose to share that has got to be a user-defined control.
Great. Well, that's actually good news. Let's open up to questions. We don't actually have a mic, but if you could stand up and speak loudly and also identify yourself if you're with media or with an office here. Who has questions?
John McGarvey, the Constitution Committee. I just wonder if you would elaborate a little bit on the story, John, that you had when you were first speaking about the car rental company.
Oh.
Can you just give us a little background and how that?
Sure, I can give you an article on it if you want. But the quick answer is that a non-name brand rental car company in New Haven, Connecticut, rented a van that had GPS capability to someone, and at the top of the contract it says we use GPS capability to enforce these rules. But they didn't really read the rules all that carefully. And but by the time the person returned the van, he had been charged three $150 charges because the GPS technology indicated that he was driving over 80 miles an hour, exceeding the speed limit. And he was obviously very upset. Everyone sued each other. I'm actually not sure what happened in the lawsuit. But I mean, that's an example of, and really, most importantly, where there was not sufficient notice that, you know, maybe it's something that, I mean, car rental companies do use GPS technology to track their fleet, but at least as of 2001, all the major companies were saying that they do not use it, and they don't really have the capability to use it to track the customers, just, you know, to kind of keep track of their behavior.
Thank you.
Just, there's that one anecdote that's close to that, and it sort of sets the difference between a public and a private organization. In Massachusetts, when they introduced the speed pass, they had begun to introduce legislation that said that they would time you between the toll booths. And that clearly was a violation of people's rights as a government authority to go ahead and track your location for the purposes of finding you criminally liable for some action. And that died pretty quickly.
Although I remember 30, 40 years ago on the Maine Turnpike, I actually think they used to do that. With no technology, it was a paper ticket that, you know, said you entered exit 1 and, you know, 20 minutes later you left at exit, you know, 7, but hadn't, you know, had done it too quickly. You know, so. Let's see, other questions? I'm sure there one in the back.
My name is Lloyd from the Internet Caucus Advisory
Committee. He's our boss, basically.
Certainly. I have a question about what constitutes opt-in. We talked a lot about opt-in, opt-out, and the CTIA standard is opt-in, and the CPI rules for the FCC is kind of opt-in, maybe brought down, the European Commission rule is opt-in, as in Japan. But what we've seen, I think, through this course of the ad word debate here in Congress is what constitutes opt-in is kind of a fuzzy thing. So when it comes to the sensitivity of being, you know, tracked by whether it be a third party like Loki or Wave Market or even being tracked by, you know, one of your social networking buddies, who you think is a, you know, a friend, I think the question of what really is opt-in is very important here. And is that opt-in where in writing you have to send to the carrier or to Loki, you know, your consent, or is it an end-user license agreement that has all the different terms? Is it just checking a box at the end of an end-user? How does a mechanism work? And how does that help instill confidence?
I know that when we looked at it, we wanted a flexible standard because there's such a range of customer expectations, and all this from the CTIA petition stems from 911, and it's hard to believe, but as recently as 10 years ago, there was concern that the wiretap laws would prevent PSAPs from acting on location information that they didn't receive through a court order subpoena, because the wiretap laws prevent the government from getting this kind of information. And the Federal Communications Commission actually obtained from the Justice Department an opinion letter saying that you can imply opt-in or you can imply consent when a customer dials 911 and asks to be rescued, or acting as a good Samaritan dials 911 and asks that somebody be dispatched to rescue someone else. So from the very beginning, at least of our involvement, there's been a recognition that there's really a continuum depending on the circumstances and fundamentally depending on how clear the notice and expectation of the user is with respect to whatever location-based application they're involved in.
Jim or Chuck?
Actually, when you first mentioned, is it a paper opt-in, that whole thought sends a cringe down my spine. In the day of the internet, managing, you know, hordes of paper with people just signing their name or checking a box on a piece of paper. We have actually three separate opt-ins for our service. One is from our carrier partner and their terms and conditions having to be accepted during the registration process. Separately, we have our own terms and conditions which have to be accepted. And then last but not least, at least on the Family Finder application, when a parent wishes to add in one of their children's phones to go and locate, they first have to send out a safety word to that device, and the safety word then has to be responded to with the same word coming back to match it. So there has to be user interaction. So whoever owns that device has to know that, yes, I'm giving the authorization for my device, my location, to be provided for this service.
And can I ask a question with regard to your StreetNav product? Essentially, once somebody has a phone and they have a friend that also has a phone, like social networking context, a friend, they can ping each other directly, which says, do you consent to having this friend track you? Or being part of the street height tracking.
What happens on street height is the the user themselves, they can post up their information on an interactive map whenever they want to. Whether they keep it private or public is something that they choose off of the menu structure. If they make it public, then it's viewable on that web to everyone. If it is made private, then it's only the list that end user created who can then see their data and also get that data downloaded to them when they come in a near vicinity.
I think that the concern about social networking sites, that we've been, there's a lot of discussion around this mm-hmm. in Congress and elsewhere. Can a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old consent to even posting private information or disclosing the location information to friends or buddies? Is that something that maybe we should allow them to consent, opt in to and consent to?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It brings up the same type of question of, you know, somebody, you know, a minor going into an internet chat room and all of a sudden typing in their address. Can you control that? I don't know if you can. That's a good question for you to investigate. I don't know. I honestly don't know how you can in a world of open communication, how you can control what's going to be entered in on a particular text message or IM.
Chad, does the Loki product deal with kids in any particular way?
No, it's a nice example here because the open flexible standards that CTIA has promulgated and then Jim gives a very clear example of a particular type of application. As developers, the opt-in really depends on the use case. So for ours, we are not as stringent on the opt-in because we don't share location with anybody else. It is only given to you to use on your device to bring content to you. So we're very clear that we use your location to be able to do that, but it all happens on your device only and not at a central location, and no one knows where you are. So that level of interaction then drives us from a business perspective on the levels of T's and C's and opt-in that we should have.
Okay.
Other
questions from the floor? Hold on. In
fact, with respect to pushing or providing advertisements to your customers, what type of logging is available for the advertiser that's paying for this their advertising? Particularly, are they being provided audit logs to say, okay, this customer ID at this geographic location was provided this number of your advertisements after searching and making a query for this type of
So in our perspective, the way that advertising is handled is we don't provide location to an advertiser. An advertiser doesn't generally care what your location is in the era of internet advertising. They really care about reaching a particular demographic profile. So there's an incredible amount of data out there that from database marketers that say, you know, in this particular neighborhood, the profile is generally this. An advertiser says, I want to reach a particular profile. So what we do is basically identify the profile through location, serve the profile up to a suite of advertisers who want to reach that profile. So the advertiser never knows the location of the person receiving the ad. They only know that we have delivered it to the type of profile of person that they want. And that's how we handle it on ours.
They only know the number of advertisements that you sent.
They know that it was sent to young, urban, single people 1,500 times.
That's right.
And from our perspective, the Wavemarket perspective, it's actually monitored as a click-through, similar to an internet. So somebody actually has to go over a particular icon or go over a particular bar on the display of the phone and click on that. That the phone then relays back that, you know, the request was made for that information. The information gets downloaded, and at that point we then monitor the click itself, but not the demographic of that mobile phone user.
And do your servers, how long do you maintain that data?
Quite honestly, we don't have a commercial service out there. So I can't answer that right now, but I think the driving force on that is going to be the billing cycle, on how quickly the billing turnaround happens.
Okay. There is a question here. Miriam?
Yeah. A question, if you could say a little more about the security, especially when you're dealing with the paging system involving children's location. I mean, a parent coordinating sends a message, I just dropped the child off at DuPont Circle for a dentist appointment. So what's the security on that? And can it be intercepted by other people? How easy is that?
I don't quite think I understand what your question is. If somebody drops off a child and then the parent does a location check on that child?
Let's talk about the location. So, for example, an nanny is sending a message to the parents, the child has been dropped off, or the child has been located in this area. How secure are those communications?
The communication to the nanny is the communication to the nanny and then to the parent. Is that encrypted, wireless in transit? Is that what I'm questioning?
I can talk to the radio piece because we're primarily just using digital wireless, and it's particularly in an urban area, surprisingly short range. So, first of all, we don't have the same problems with intercepting digital signals that we had with analog. They're not in the open, and they're encrypted to begin with, being digital. So that, absent the kind of very expensive and complicated equipment that only law enforcement has, not aware of any interception of the over-the-air radio transmissions. And because the cells are so close together, you'd have to be pretty close anyway to be able to intercept that. Once the transmission then goes through the public switch network or the open internet to a website, that I suspect depends on the kind of access arrangements the website provider has established.
And in particular, the family locator service that we have in place right now goes through the wireless network. It's not really an internet related handoff or switch in terms of the location of the child. So that's why I had that puzzled look on my face when you asked your question. The use case doesn't really form into the service itself. The service that we have is, let's say you've got a 16-year-old who's into sports, and after high school, they go to the soccer field for practice. What we found is that when you try to call the child, quite often their phone is in their backpack, it's in their purse, it's in, you know, lunch bag, whatever the case may be. It might be sitting on a table or a bench somewhere while they're over playing. Or, even commonly, they look and see, oh, geez, it's mom and dad calling on caller ID, and ignore the call. So our service provides peace of mind. It allows a parent to, through a push of a few buttons on either their phone, which then goes through the wireless network, which does use encryption, or through the web, which is also using encryption, allows you to go and pinpoint within a level of accuracy where that device happens to be. So it just gives you more peace of mind. There's not really, you can send, let's say, a text message, but again, that goes through the wireless the wireless network, not necessarily the internet. And whenever the internet is used, it's always encrypted.
Okay. Another question? Yep, another question here.
If I may, I know it's getting time, but we don't want to develop commercial research service. And I wanted to expand the debate a little bit in the last remaining minutes. We've talked about existing technology and evolving technology for locations in the context of wireless, Wi-Fi, and some other adjacent technologies. I think in terms of legislation and policy, that we need to think more broadly in terms of what might be considered intrusive technologies, which would include RFID, for example, which is another area that is very close to location technology and wireless. And also on the policy side is the issue of newer digital technologies, such as digital video broadcasting for handheld, which is digital TV, which could be an emergency alert system based on technology. So from a policy point of view, when you think about location technology and policy and law, the envelope or the box or whatever you want to call it needs to be bigger than just cell phones, Wi-Fi, and related. And if Mike probably has a comment on that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a valid point. Very, very quickly, does anyone want to jump in?
My only comment strictly because I've known Linda for so long, and she's absolutely right. We don't live in a static world and in the kind of silos that a cell phone does this and a laptop does that and an RFID chip does something differently. We see convergence of across public, private devices and everything. We do need to be thinking of all these issues together.
Okay, let me ask a final question, asking for a one-sentence answer from each of you because we got to finish in about a minute. What's the most exciting location-based service that you see on the horizon, or, depending on your perspective, what's the most worrisome privacy concern in the location area that you see on the horizon? Okay, why don't we start with
Loki is the most exciting. No, I actually think the most exciting thing is going to be convergence. I think what you're going to see over the next 18 to 24 months is that more and more devices will have more and more accurate location capabilities to it, which will provide consumers more options to be able to use location as part of their everyday life, whether it's a cell phone or a laptop and it has a GPS chip in it and it's got Wi-Fi location. All of that's going to be very interesting over the next 24 months.
Okay, Jim?
Well, I'm going to sound like an advertisement here, but the family locator services, the services that are pointing more towards the consumer, that are giving them peace of mind, letting them know where individuals happen to be at or where they're not at when they should be, let's say, at school, I think over the next 12 months are just set to explode here in the U.S. Following on from that, we've had a lot of success with mobile dating or mobile matching in the Asian market space using location and proximity, all done anonymously, of course. But it's taken off quite rapidly there, and I think that the U.S. market is ready for services along those lines.
All right, Mike, you have the last word.
I only have one sentence, but I think that we're talking about social networking, mobile search, and these kinds of family presence, and all of them are going to be exciting. They're all coming to market now, and I think it's really going to change the way people think of wireless devices and capabilities. What's scary, I think, is not so much of the commercial abuses that we've been focused on historically, but basically the kind of creeps on the internet who will take advantage of these capabilities